situations were a bit, I wouldn't say contrived, but in any case, it's a minor criticism. You should see this film. It's fun. It's well observed, and it's got a really, it's got nice performances by everyone here. You really couldn't have a more talented cast, you know, aside from Benny Elfman and Greta Gerwig is one of the best actresses we have. And this is a satisfying film. You check it out.
Is Annette just not getting the roles, or is she just being pretty picky?
I would venture to say that she's not getting them.
Okay.
I would venture to say that at her age,
mm-hmm.
for a woman in, quote, Hollywood, I would venture to say she's not getting things that are very intriguing to her.
Right. Yeah, okay.
There's still that ceiling there. Yeah, I mean, she doesn't, obviously, you know, she doesn't, quote, need to work.
Sure.
In any sense, to, you know, to pay the rent.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
but, you know, I just don't think that she's getting things. I could be wrong, but I would venture to say.
Yep.
I saw a bit of something on British TV about, you know, they were interviewing Meryl Streep, and she, you know, she's into her 60s, and she talked about when she turned 40, you know, she got a number of scripts at once where she played a witch or some sort of hag just because she had turned 40.
Nice.
My point is, I just don't think that a lot of intriguing things are being written.
Mm-hmm.
I think more. I would also venture to say, I think more things now, there's more opportunities now because you have the avenue of television. But my surmise is she's just probably not getting stuff that really,
yeah,
you know, really is making her too excited or happy.
So. Sure.
And this is an instance where it works. So this one, 20th Century Woman, it's rated R. Check it out.
20th Century Woman. All right, good. So we got two good ones. It means we got a trifecta today. What's your pick of the week?
Well, opening today wide is a movie called Going in Style, which concerns a group of a trio of elderly men who get involved with a bank robbery. It is a remake of the film I'm going to talk to you about.
Ah, I didn't know that.
The original Going in Style came out in 1979. It's rated PG and it was directed by Martin Brest. It stars George Burns, Art Carney, and Lee Strasberg. And these are three elderly men who share a small apartment in New York, and they're sort of bored. And, you know, their lives are in the doldrums, and they decide, for a couple of reasons, to rob a bank. And this is a comedy drama, and, you know, obviously they're not professional thieves. And this film is remembered fondly by, I think, more than a few people. And while I haven't seen the newer film, the new film, just opened today, I do recommend this one. It's got a really nice cast and a story that will, as one gets older, is more affecting. But I saw it many years ago and it stuck with me. And it is fun. And you will want our trio of amateur robbers. You may want them to succeed. In any case, Going in Style, 1979. It's out there. Should give that one a look.
All right. I didn't know it was a remake, but thanks for pointing that out. The new one looks promising, but you'll give us the best assessment of that, I'm sure.
Well, if you like, maybe we can give that one a look and we can talk about it.
I saw Alan Arkin in that one. So.
Well, yeah, you've got a wonderful cast in the recent film or in the new film. You've got a wonderful cast.
Mm-hmm.
Alan Arkin and Michael Caine and Morgan Freeman, and from the little that I've read, there are certain, aside from the basic premise, there are significant differences in the retelling of it, if you like.
All right, excellent. Well, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you for a minute or so, Don Rickles. Anything?
Just read that.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, He made some films aside from Casino. You know, he certainly seemed to have popped up on TV in the 60s and 70s. I mean, the CPO Sharky from The Tube.
Right. Yep.
You know, he made some films, and he actually did some straight parts in films. One that he was in a B movie that I liked called X, The Man with X-Ray Eyes. and he played a very sleazy part in there. But, you know, aside from that, I just thought that really no one even attempted to emulate him.
Yeah. No,
there wasn't an insult comic as such.
Nope.
You know, and just the longevity of his career is quite something. And he's a little giant, you know. I mean, he was in movies from the 50s onward, you know, sporadically. Run Silent, Run Deep, the submarine movie, and a few others. And then, of course, you know, he's Mr. Potato Head in the Toy Story.
That's right, he is. Yep, that's right. He's skeptical and cutting Mr. Potato Head. Yep, fits him well. Excellent. Thank you so much, sir. Appreciate it as always. We'll check back with you again next week.
All right, we'll see you then.
All right, have a great one. Bye-bye.
You too.
All right, that's Mike at the Movies, good friend of mine, giving you insight into three good movies and a couple others as well. So go out and check Logan, 20th Century Women, and Going in Style. Time for me to take a break. We'll be right back with more of Good Morning Hunterdon. It's National Beer Day. We'll be talking to Lone Eagle Brewery right after this break. You're listening to Good Morning Hunterdon on HuntingChamberRadio.com.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's physician referral service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
Tonight I ordered a targeted military strike.
And most of the world is reacting the way British Defense Secretary Michael Fallon is to news that President Trump ordered a missile attack on a Syrian airbase from which the chemical gas attack in northern Syria was believed to have been launched earlier this week. That British official says,
"This was a very limited, very appropriate, narrowly focused action.
Predictably, it's being condemned by Russia. Syria was believed to have been launched earlier this week." That British official says,
"This was a very limited, very appropriate, narrowly focused action.
Predictably, it's being condemned by Russia, and the Iranian foreign ministry says it was dangerous, destructive, and violates the principles of international law."
Representative Mike Conaway, a senior member of the committee, will now lead this investigation.
That's House Speaker Paul Ryan speaking after the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, Devin Nunes, announces he is stepping away from an investigation into whether Russia meddled in last year's elections. This is USA Radio News.
You're listening to Love Advice with Leanne. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, Leanne. Longtime listener, first-time caller. Why, in your professional opinion, do you never take my calls off the air?
Is this Carl?
Yep, it's Carl. I mean, we had a few dates. Everything was great, I thought.
Well, you know, when you switch to GEICO, you could save a lot of money on car insurance.
Okay, awesome.
You should call them.
I will.
GEICO, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
If your pet needed thousands of dollars in vet care, could you afford it? PetSavingsUSA.com members are covered by discounted pet insurance with the first 2 months free. Plus, save up to 50% at every major retailer and receive hundreds of dollars worth of free gifts. To receive 2 months of free pet insurance and an instant $100 in savings, call 877-835-6060. That's 877-835-6060. Or go to PetSavingsUSA.com.
The Senate has just restored itself to an almost unbroken tradition of never filibustering judges.
Supreme Court nominee Neil Gorsuch expected to be confirmed in a matter of hours now that Senate Republicans have triggered the so-called nuclear option. Terry Moore says it's quite a rules change, allowing him to get confirmed on just a majority vote.
Democrats had blocked Gorsuch by insisting on a 60-vote threshold in the 100-member Senate. Democratic leader Chuck Schumer called 60 votes a guardrail.
The answer is not to undo the guardrails, the rules. It's to steer back to the middle and get a more mainstream candidate.
The Republican maneuver is called a nuclear option because it could blow up any resemblance of bipartisanship in the closely divided Senate.
Charlie Hoffman leads the Masters after shooting a 7-under-65 in a windy first round at Augusta National yesterday. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Ah, oh, fresh powder. I'll get the skis.
Ugh, I can't.
Winter nasal congestion. Is it A, cold, B, sinus pressure, C, allergies?
I'm not sure.
For all of the above, the answer is D, Allegra D, a maximum strength decongestant plus a powerful non-drowsy antihistamine for 24 hours of relief.
Feel better?
Yep. Feel like racing?
Hey, wait!
This winter, the answer is Allegra D. Look for Allegra D at the pharmacy counter. Use as directed.
It's an honor to have you in the United States. We've had a long discussion already.
President Trump kicking off meetings yesterday with the visiting Chinese President Xi Jinping, then having a dinner for the Chinese president last night. The two leaders expected to get into more detailed discussions today on trade and foreign policy issues, including North Korea's nuclear ambitions. Comedy legend Don Rickles has passed away, as we hear from correspondent Phil Nash.
The man dubbed with such monikers as the Merchant of Venom and Mr. Warmth is dead. Comedian Don Rickles, whose unique brand of so-called insult humor was unparalleled, passed away earlier today from kidney failure at his home near Los Angeles. Rickles had one of the most prolific careers in the entertainment business as both comedian and actor, appearing in such movies as Run Silent, Run Deep, Kelly's Heroes, and Casino. He was a headliner in Las Vegas for decades, sparing no one with his relentless barbs, not even Frank Sinatra. Don Rickles, dead at the age of 90.
And Twitter is taking the U.S. government to court for trying to unmask the user behind an anti-Donald Trump account. The account in question is a mock profile for the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services Agency. The lawsuit claims Customs and Border Patrol agents tried to order Twitter to turn over records belonging to the account, including addresses. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
Good morning, Hunterdon. This is Big C coming to you from HunterdonChamberRadio.com at the studio offices of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce in Flemington, New Jersey. Good morning, Hunterdon kicks off your day by providing you with local news, traffic and weather, as well as light topics through Vitamin C, Wake Up Call, and Chamber Chat. I also have many guests focusing on Hunterdon County community, business, and education. Listen to me every weekday morning from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Good Morning Hunterdon, HunterdonChamberRadio.com.
It's time for Hunterdon Chamber Radio Weather. It's 43 degrees in Flemington right now. Overcast skies, 40% chance of precipitation. Today is April 7th. It's Friday, TGIF, and we have weather from Weather Underground telling us cloudy with scattered showers. It'll be breezy with highs in the upper 40s. West winds 15 to 20 miles an hour with gusts up to 30. Chance of rain is 50%. Some of those gusts are actually bringing down some of our trees. We've had some power outages in the area. Mostly cloudy and a slight chance of rain, showers in the evening. It'll be cold with lows in the upper 30s. North winds 10 to 15 miles an hour with gusts up to 25. Chance of rain is 20%. For tomorrow, sunny highs in the mid-50s. Northwest winds 10 to 15 miles an hour with gusts up to 25. Sunday, highs in the mid-60s and sunny. It'll be mostly sunny, highs in the lower 70s on Monday. Sunny highs in the mid-70s on Tuesday, and on Wednesday the 12th, partly sunny with highs in the upper 60s. Temperatures in our area. We have 43 in Raritan, 43 in Ringo's, 40 in Frenchtown, 38 up in Asbury, 39 in Tewksbury, and 42 over in Bridgewater. That's Good Morning Hunter and Hunt Chamber Radio Weather.
Lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. Let me repeat, lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. This is not a crazy diet or exercise program. No drugs, hormones, or shots. You can lose 20 to 45 pounds in 40 days with Nutrimost Resonant Frequency Technology to measure 2,800 of your body's key biomarkers. Using NRF, they can find and correct the cause of your weight problem by measuring factors affecting weight gain, including metabolism, fat burning, fat storage, appetite, detoxification, and hormonal regulation. It's safe, fast, easy, and effective, and you won't walk around hungry or have cravings. It's even doctor supervised. Schedule a body composition analysis and consultation. You can be transformed in 40 days guaranteed. This is a limited time offer, so they can't wait to see you look great.
So call 888-718-7077. That's 888-718-7077. Or visit njthin.com. That's njthin.com.
Beer, beer, I'm going for a beer. Beer, 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 I'm gonna drink some beer. I like drinking beer.
All right, it's National Beer Day. I can't think of anything better at this point. Maybe National Bourbon Day, but I'll give creds to my friend here. Bob King is in the studio with me, and we're going to talk about Lone Eagle Brewing, which is right down the street on Stangle Road. So I want to bring Bob in. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. Thanks for having us here today. Very excited.
Yes, this is awesome, and I appreciate you coming on. It was a perfect match. I saw National Beer Day, and I said, let's see what Lone Eagle Brewing is doing, and you guys were willing and ready to come on over, so it's an excellent opportunity for us to showcase you guys. So let's start from the beginning. Who are you? How are you affiliated with Lone Eagle?
So this is Bob. I'm one of the partners at Lone Eagle. The way we got started, I was in corporate America basically my whole career. So I have an engineering background and in corporate IT, and worked for AT&T Lucent for 24 years. The last 7 years in the corporate world, I worked for Merck. And they decided to send my job and my team's job overseas. And so I was looking for something to do, and my good friend Todd Becker, also my business partner, came to me with this idea. He goes, I'm going to open up a brewery here in Flemington. And I'm like, wow, that's a great idea. I said, my first question or remark back to him was saying, are you looking for an investor? I just had this, you know, severance package. I said, are you looking for an investor? He goes, no, I think I can do this. I'm like, well, I'm not doing anything. You need some help. And he's like, no, I think I can do this. I'm like, all right, just give me a call if you need anything.
Right.
2 weeks later, he's knocking on my door. I need help. Wow. And so that's how we got started. So that was about a year ago. About a year and a half ago, in September, we signed an agreement as a partnership. In October and that year, November, we submitted our paperwork to the federal government to get our license. We filed to the state for a license, which is a whole ordeal in of itself. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of like Todd's been role. He's taking care of the paperwork stuff, and my role is to go out and do a lot of the engineering. And so I came up with the layout, the design, purchased the equipment, mm-hmm. and so we started from there. My background's a little all over the place, a little corporate, IT.
Right.
And it's come in handy. I look back and building out this whole project. And oddly enough, every skill that I've learned throughout my career, I applied to putting this
thing
together.
Isn't it fascinating how that happens? It's so interesting how people kind of gravitate to what their skills and their passion. Somehow, some way, you find your equilibrium. That's amazing. So, as it turns out, I'm also a corporate IT as well.
Oh, interesting.
At one time. So I have this interesting affinity for this. Did you have any, when you said engineering, and there's a lot of different categories of engineering, were you actually in the physical engineering that you could connect physical pipes and...
Actually, no. Yeah, I love...
Just have a scientific engineering...
So I graduated from NGIT in 83 with an electrical engineering degree. That's what got me into AT&T and doing telecommunications, all that good stuff.
All right.
I went back, got a master's in computer science, and that's what got me into the IT profession.
I see. Right.
And so... But for me, when I was working on this project, it was just solving problems. Every day was a new problem, and that's the way my mind worked. And I have a passion for, you know, working through things.
And so neither one of you has had any beer experience except for being a consumer.
We've done home brewing. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah, so from the mid-90s, when, I don't know if you remember, that you weren't allowed to brew beer at home. Back in the laws, when they changed the prohibition laws in New Jersey, You could make wine, but they left that little word called beer out of it. So I think it was the early to mid-90s that New Jersey actually allowed you to officially make beer at home. And when they did that, that's when I got the bug. That's when I got hooked on it. Started buying the equipment. My wife, by the way, hated when I made beer at home. She just hates the smell of it.
It's pretty nasty. You got to get used to that.
Well, it's one of these things I see. It's very divisive. You either love it or you hate it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm one of the fortunate. I love it. My wife hates it. So It took the cooking from inside the kitchen to outside.
Yeah.
Present some other challenges.
Yeah.
But
the barley and the hops and all that makes as they're cooking. So you did home brewing back in the 90s.
Right.
And you guys, you and your friend, your partner have been doing that for all those years?
Right. So we were doing that at home, and then we would go down to Freehold. There's a place called Brewer's Apprentice, and it was a little bit easier because we could do it on their facilities.
Okay.
We brew up a bunch of beers, and they had a bunch of recipes, so that kind of kept us in. We were trying and experimenting.
Kept your marriage going.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. So we did that for a while. So I understood the process. I understand how to make beer.
Uh-huh.
But when we started putting the brewery together and making the investment in the equipment that we did, we both realized we need to hire somebody that actually knows what they're doing.
Yeah.
And so we wanted to make sure when we got out of the gate, we were basically hitting some home runs. We didn't want to be experimenting and find out, well, this one didn't work, let's try another one.
Right.
Having consumers come in, we wanted them to have a pleasant and good experience. Said, wow, get a good buzz going. And and so we did our research and due diligence, and were able to find ourselves a really good brewer.
All right. Well, we'll get to that in just a little bit. I want to go back to your home brewing experience. When you first started, though, did you have some misses?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I look back, and there's a book by Chuck Papazian. He's called the Godfather of Home Brewing.
Right.
I read his book, and he had a recipe called Rocky Raccoon's Honey Lager. And I made that. That was my very first beer, and it came out so good. I'm like, and that's what got me hooked. I said, I can do this at home. I don't think I've ever been able to get to that level up until now.
Sure.
And so other beers I've made, and I've learned that if you don't keep things very clean, you pick up foreign bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason we're allowed to make beer and wine at home, because there's nothing in it that's really going to hurt you or harm you.
Right.
It may not taste very good,
right.
but
right.
at least you can consume it. Sure. So I made a few batches that we used to live in a townhouse here in Raritan Township. And we had a slug problem, so I ended up feeding the beer to the slugs because I didn't really care for it.
No, that's funny. Now you just gave me a hell of a flashback, because I used to work in a liquor store in my teenage college years, and they had all the stacks of beer, and some people were coming to buy the Gibbons and Stegmeyers to do exactly that.
To kill the
slugs.
I put them in a little tin saucer, and they would climb it at night and drink themselves to death.
Not a bad way to go. Wow, so pretty cool. So the home brewing, and then we had this engineering problem solving. So, all right, your partner says, I think I've got it, and then comes knocking on your door 2 weeks later. What was it that he said he needed help with?
He needed help basically doing the equipment. So he's in more on the business side, and knowing my technical background and knowing that I just research everything.
Mm-hmm.
I get into it. And so we actually hired a consultant out in Pennsylvania. The people that built our building over on Stengel, Robin Hill Developers, they were actually going to open it up with a brewer from Bucks County Brewing.
Yeah.
His name's Andrew Nickel, and they were going to partner with him. And so they were all set to open, and Andrew went to his wife and said, I'm going to go into business with these guys. And She looked at him and said, he's in a school doing IT as well, ironically. Maybe there's a pattern here.
And so, IT and beer, I don't know.
And he approaches his wife saying, I think I'm going to go into business. We're going to open up a brewery. And his facility, it's a beautiful facility out in Bucks County. He's got a micro distillery on one side and a micro brewery on the other. They were going to come in and do the same thing here with the builders. And when Andrew approached his wife, she said, you're 8 years away from retirement. You're not going off to go brew beer somewhere. So that kind of put the kibosh on it. So the building sat empty until we took it over. And Rob introduced us to Andrew, and we actually used him as a consultant to help us understand when we wanted to build a brewery, what kind of equipment do we really want to look. So he kind of gave me a good framework to start with when dealing with the different vendors. So I went out, and part of my research, I had about 6 to 7 quotes from vendors across the country, trying to do apples-to-apples comparison, finding out what features were required, what were nice to have, and then who was going to work with us. If I was using some of my corporate skills and some of my negotiating skills, I said, hey, if I'm going to give you all my business, what are you going to do for me?
Right.
This was a surprise to me. There's such a demand right now in craft beer and in the equipment. It's exploding.
Now, the only thing I can think of, maybe you can give some clarity to this. The thing I can think of is we pretty much in the United States lost our United States national breweries. Miller sold out and Budweiser sold out. The only one that grew was Boston Beer. So we've kind of lost that, and I feel like there's a little bit of a behind-the-scenes patriotism in us as a culture wanting to go back to United States brewing, and that coupled with what you just described as the kind of relaxation of having microbrews has kind of led itself to achieve that.
Here's how I look at that. It's kind of an irony. I mean, when I look at these major beer vendors over time, if you think back, if you look at the history here in Flemington back in the 1700s and 1800s, I guarantee you there was probably a pub on this street somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
And I believe I belonged to the Flemington Presbyterian Church. After church on Sundays, they would then go to the bar and socialize.
Sure.
And it was a very social thing.
Sure.
I think over time, these large corporations have just squeezed out all these little craft breweries all across America.
Yep.
And I marvel at them to a degree. Because of what they're able to produce, the volumes they can produce at the consistency that they produce. It's just, as now having set up my own brewery, I have to applaud and give kudos to that engineering feat.
Sure.
Conversely, what they can't do is what I can do. Mm-hmm. I can brew a batch today, tomorrow brew something completely different.
Yes.
They have honed their thing so much and squeezed out all the costs to drive the price points to where they are for them.
Yep.
And the irony is, you know, I can command a premium because I'm giving the consumer a variety. I'm giving them a choice. I'm giving them something they may have not tasted before. So it's something fresh, something that we brewed on premise, and that's what's exciting. And then when I travel, everywhere I go, I'm like, what's local? I want to try it. And I've been doing that for years because it's something different, and I think the consumers want that.
Excellent. All right, we're talking with Bob King from Lone Eagle Brewing, and we're going to bring him right back right after these messages. You listen to Good Morning Hunter on HuntChamberRadio.com.
Drink some beer. I like drinking beer. Lovely, lovely beer. Beer, beer, beer. I'm going for a beer. Beer, beer.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
This is Tony Clark, Para Planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
All right, listen to Good Morning Huntington on HuntingChamber.com. I have Bob King from Lone Eagle Brewing here with me, and we're talking about beer. It's National Beer Day, and I can't think of a better thing to do than have Bob explain the whole trials and tribulations of creating what is already getting a following in with Lone Eagle Brewery. So we were just talking a little bit off air here about a big score. When he and his partner decided to go into business, they decided they needed some real expertise in coming up with the brewing process. And how'd you do all that?
So there's a form called Pro Brewers Forum. That's a forum that a lot of people sell equipment, buy equipment. You can go there for advice on brewing problems. And it's basically a way the community, just a big forum where community can interact with each other. Mm-hmm. One of the sections in there is people that are looking for jobs or people that want to hire somebody.
Okay.
And so we posted an ad up there. We kind of knew what we wanted. We said, we have this size brew house. Here's approximately when we think we'll be open. So we started that process very early. As I mentioned, we partnered in September. We started our paperwork in November.
I gotta jump. This sounds like it flew by. In a year and a half, you're already an established brewery.
It was a lot of work.
I know it is, but it's only been a year and a half, man.
It has been. And fortunately, the building was there when we started. It was gravel on the floor, studs on the wall, and a loft, and that was all there was.
Yeah.
We started at the end of February of 16, and in July we opened, which was
fantastic.
It's unheard of. We were put in 15-hour days. By the time we opened the doors.
But you're from IT, man. You used to.
It was a nice change of pace. That's true. We put in those hours as well. Yes. I still spend a lot of time doing IT, believe it or not.
I'm sorry. I interrupted you. Go ahead.
So we put a job ad out there, and we got a few nibbles. We said at that time we didn't think we were going to open until September of October, not in July.
Mm-hmm.
And so we got a few nibbles. We started the interview process. Every candidate we interviewed, we put them over to Bluefish Grill because our building was still under construction.
Sure.
We sat inside their little where they used to the kiln, where they used to fire the pottery.
Right.
And so that's where we conducted all of our interviews, and that was so very nostalgic. It was great, and we got a few hits, and we had one person at that time up in New York that we really kind of liked.
Mm-hmm.
And then in February, we found out that the state said, well, as long as you get your CO to open, you can start brewing beer, provided we met all their other guidelines. And so we said, whoa, this is a lot sooner. I hit another bump on the form and said, hey, we're ahead of schedule. We need a brewer. And
wow.
I got flooded with resumes.
Wow.
And so we went through them all, and we saw one from our head brewer from Dogfish, and that's one of my favorite beers. And
that's so awesome. What a score, man.
We did a phone interview. Really were impressed. We said, you got to come up. We need to meet with you. We need to talk to you. Went through the full interview. We brought in Andrew from Bucks County. He was our consultant to say, hey, look, pepper him with the brewing questions. Let's make sure, you know, this guy's the real deal. Mm-hmm. And he said, yeah, he's spot on. Wow. We had two or three candidates that we were very impressed. It was a difficult choice. And since I was closer to the process, my partner said, Bob, you make the decision. I'm like, thanks. We ended up, and fortunately, Alex was our selection, mm-hmm. and it was due to his experience in really working on commercial brew houses.
Right.
And so he came in from the beginning, came up with the recipes. I remember our very first brew, and I've never seen somebody work so hard. And it was new to the equipment. We had our vendor there working with us on our first brew, and I remember it coming out a little bit lighter. We didn't get as much sugars out of the grains as we had hoped for. And so he's boiling it out. And the way you can get your gravities back up, you just boil off the water, and then you're left with more sugars. Mm-hmm. And so he was boiling it. We threw the hops in, and I said, don't worry. You know, people have told us your first brew you always throw away on a new brew system. Said it's okay. And we decided to move forward, and we pitched the yeast, and, you know, that's a few $100. I'm like, it's okay. You know what? If the yeast is going to propagate, we'll pull it off the bottom. We're going to be able to recover from this. Don't worry. It's going to be good. And we started tasting in the fermenter, and every day it was very light and it was very bitter. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not sure. You know, I said, if this is not going to be good, we're not going to we want to put our best foot forward. We're not going to put out something that we didn't think was right. Mm-hmm. And I remember the fourth day in the fermenter, I come in and he's got this big grin on his face. And I'm like, what's going on? So try it now. And I taste it. And I'm like, it was like overnight, something, it just mellowed. And it was like, this is good. This is going to work. And I ended up bringing in a couple of my friends who are really good, and they're very good at beer. And I said, I didn't tell them the story. I said, taste this. And like, wow, this is good. I'm like, that's all I need to know. And so
you didn't want to lower the bar for him.
Right. And so every batch he's brewed has been put on, and it's all good. It's all been good.
Now, give me a little insight as to, you put out this request for looking for a brewer. What enticed people to come and brew for you? What's the impetus for them?
What I have found is, so typically at larger places like Dogfish, and we've had people from, I'll say, down the road in River Horse, we had some of their brewers come and talk with us. If you're not the head brewer, mm-hmm. you tend to be one of several, depending on how many. So, for example, Alex was brewing in a shift. So Dogfish has three groups of eight brewers. They brew 6 days a week, 24 hours a day. And every 6 weeks, he was basically shifting. Mm-hmm. So you'd have the morning shift, the afternoon shift, then the midnight shift. And he's recently married. He has a young child. He's got a young family. This can take a toll on a family. So sure. For him, he was looking for something with a little bit more stability, I think, something to give him both a work and a home life on a more consistent basis. And I also think he really wanted to say, look, I'm ready. I've done my dues. I want to put my mark on the world. So I think it's a combination of factors. And others that we do, they wanted to have that, say, these are my beers. I'm not doing it based on somebody. I'm not brewing somebody else's recipes. These are now mine. And I think that gives them a little bit of pride. And that's their maturation, right? So we now have an associate brewer, and he's educating that person on the cleaning process.
A little bit of cross-training there.
Right, nice. Right. So he hasn't graduated to brewing. And even though I'm a home brewer, the brewer doesn't allow me to brew on my equipment. So we do small batches in the driveway. He lets me brew out there.
Cool. All right. So we got that. So now tell me a little bit about Lone Eagle. Now It's an obvious on the surface that we're in Flemington, and it's a reach out to the Lone Eagle there. But there's more to it, right?
There is more to it. And when we started this, we wanted to come up with a name, and we really struggled. And we thought it would be great to get the community involved. Mm-hmm. So being the IT guy that I am, I created a URL called namethebrewery.com. So we set up a competition and a contest. And we had over 425 submissions. And so it was wonderful to see all the different names that came in. One of our friends sent us, since it was Todd and I, they said, well, why don't you call it Two Idiots Brewing? We said, you know, that's kind of fun, but is that really what we want to go out in the marketplace with? Mm-hmm. Actually, the first name we came up with was called Conspiracy Brewing. We tried to do some trade. We had so many ideas. So inside the brew, the ground floor is the main tasting floor. We're going to call that the Moonscape. And the loft was going to be the book repository. So we were going to plan all these conspiracies across the country. And even the Lindbergh trial, to a degree, had some conspiracy tones to it. So That was the theme. We did our initial trademark investigation, and it looked good. Mm-hmm. We then hired a professional to do the research, and somebody up in Massachusetts had mailed it like 45 days before we did. So we couldn't go with that. The second place name was Lone Eagle, which we liked. And people come in and said, that's the name I picked for you guys. And I said, you and four others. And so we had actually several submissions for the name. And Lone Eagles, as we know, is Charles Lindbergh's call name.
Right.
And it's interesting because I don't think a lot of people that come to the brewery that are out of town, they may understand and heard about Charles Lindbergh. They didn't make the connection.
Oh.
And so we have a nice, my wife's sister for our opening found the beautiful poster that has, and it matches our colors. It's red and it says Lone Eagle. And it gives a little bit of history about Charles Lindbergh, and it has the spirit of St. Louis.
Nice.
So, people that come in, just look to your right. You'll see the poster up, and it gives you a little bit of history there.
Sweet. All right. I didn't know that. I thought it was pretty obvious, but I guess not. If you're out of town, you're...
Yeah.
All right. So the Lone Eagle Brewing. So, all right. So you brought Alex in, and you guys started brewing your first batch. What type of beer was that? Was it the IPA?
No, the very first batch was an American Pale Ale. So,
okay.
So the IPAs are very... hoppy, a lot of malts, mm-hmm. And so they're more expensive to brew.
Right.
And if our very first brew, if we were going to throw it away, we didn't want to drop that kind of money on it.
Sure.
I'm trying to I think it was definitely one of the very first brews we did. It might have been the fourth beer we had produced.
Mm-hmm.
And so the variant that you have now. So one of the when we were talking with the brewer during the interview process, I wanted to make sure every time we brewed a batch of beer, I want to make sure as we're tasting it, we're always asking ourselves, what can we do to make it better? And the thing with the brewing process, you got to be very careful, because if you change three things and it comes out better or worse, well, which one of those three was it?
Yeah,
so you got to be
now
very
careful. Back to the IT guy again.
That's right. And so you change one thing and see, wasn't this better? And hopefully over time, you continue making your beer better. So
yep.
A person that's tasting a batch over batch, they may not pick up those nuances. But if you tasted it the first one versus a year ago and you said, well, you tried it two different, you should say, wow, this is.
Now, realistically, Bob, can you remember what the beer tastes like 6 months ago compared to now?
For me personally,
it's
very difficult because I'm tasting so many
every right.
batch, and I'm tasting out of the fermenter. We taste throughout the entire process.
Right.
The brewer, he's got a much better palate than I do. He's got a much better nose than I do.
Mm-hmm.
I remember another brewery came in and congratulated and welcomed us in, and they bought one of their Hefeweizen, which is a nice summer beer.
Mm-hmm.
And I tasted it like, wow, this is good. And then I compared it to ours. And then when he left, my brewer, we did side-by-side tastings.
Right.
And he went in and he picked out every difference. And I'm like, as soon as he saw him, I'm like, oh, he's right. So he's got a much more sophisticated palate than
wow.
I do. So that's why I like him. So, and part of what he does. And so what we ask him to do is we like to keep a nice mix on the board, right? We'll have lighter beers. We have people that come in and they're your typical Bud and Coors because that's what they've grown up on.
Sure.
And they're like, well, I'm not sure I like that hoppy stuff or the fruity stuff or the dark stuff.
So you kind of draw parallels to people?
We do. And so over time, the experience I've seen, and it's really interesting. I've seen so many different people come through. Everyone's taste is different.
Mm-hmm.
And usually by the third time, I can get it. And so I'll say, what kind of beer do you like? And I'll say, try this. They're like, no, a little too sweet. All right, they'll try that. They're like, oh, that's good. They say no on that one. I remember we had one party and a young woman came up to me and said, I don't like the hoppy stuff. I don't like IPAs. I'm like, okay. So I gave her something that was a little swipper. We had a triple Belgium. I gave her that. She goes, no, too sweet. I gave her our cranberry saison and she said, no, too tart. And I'm like, all right. I didn't even tell. I reached back, gave her the IPA. Ooh, this is really good. Which one is that? I said, just enjoy it. Didn't even want to tell
her. The one that she didn't want. The hoppy one. Nice. So, all right. So tell us a little about what it's like to go into Lone Eagle.
So when you come in, it's a very inviting building. It's new on the outside. In fact, when people approach and they drive by it, it doesn't look like a brewery.
No.
So
it's like a nice little storefront. It's not even a storefront. It's a nice little house type.
Right.
Cabinish.
And they don't realize the space we have because it's got a very sloped roof in the front.
Right.
And so in the back of the building, and so in the front, it's very open, very vaulted ceilings.
Yep.
When you walk in, immediately to your right is the brew house. So one of the requirements by New Jersey state law is you have to do a tour before tasting. Now, they're very vague about what a tour is. A tour,
meaning the customer?
That is correct.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so that's the New Jersey state law. So we're trying, we're part of the New Jersey Brewers Guild, and we're trying to get that changed so we don't have to do that. Now, they define a tour as having a meaningful engagement with somebody that works at the brewery, and you have to talk about the brewery. So it sometimes when we're really busy, that can be very short and brief, and we have what we call a self-guided tour, a card that explains the beer-making process. Anybody that wants to do a tour, I'm always happy to take them through.
Sure.
And so that's part of those. So immediately to the right is our brew house. We built it where it's open so people can see in, so they can see what the equipment looks like. Mm-hmm. We have the brewing equipment. We tend to brew in the morning when we're not open because it is steam. Heated, and some of the pipes are close, and we don't want people touching them. If we are, we put up signs saying, please don't touch. It's very hot.
Sure.
On the back side is what we call the cellaring side. That's where we do all the fermentation. Those are insulated, glycol cool jackets to keep the temperatures at the desired range, so the yeast work really hard for us. Mm-hmm. And so when you walk in, the brew house is to the right. Immediately in front of you is the bar. And behind the bar, we have a big chalkboard where we have little tags that we keep all the names of the beer and the alcohol by volume. Right. We typically have 12 beers on tap. We'll do 13 if we have a nitro. We'll serve out of a kegerator. And we just started doing a firkin. A firkin is a small cask of beer. It's a cask beer, and it's naturally carbonated. So most of our beer is carbonated with food-grade CO2. Mm-hmm. When we do a cask beer, we'll take an actively fermenting batch of beer, pour it into the gas with beer that's already been fermented,
right.
Seal it up, and because it's consuming the rest of those sugars and giving off CO2, it naturally carbonates. So it's a little less carbonated. We'll serve it at a warmer temperature, kind of like an English-style beer where they'll serve it closer to basement temperature.
Right.
And so we call it Firkin Friday, so the first Friday of every month, and so this coming Friday is...
Today.
Yeah, today should be Firkin Friday. So we actually taped one and put it up on Facebook where you take... it's a bung you have to punch out, so I'll take the spigot, knock it in with the mallet hammer, and beer usually comes exploding out. So it's kind of fun to watch if you do it right.
You
got to
do that
beer.
Live, man. That's hilarious. Wow.
Actually, yeah, we should think about Facebook Live and
do it. Live and do that. Yeah,
so then it's gravity fed, and so we usually try to consume that within that evening or early the next day.
No, what a shame.
So it's less carbonated, but it's a maltier. Just. I was in Scotland a couple of years ago for the Open when they played at St. Andrews. Mm-hmm. And I was with Todd, my partner, and a few of our friends, and I just loved that beer. And I said, haven't you had enough? I'm like, it's going to be a long time before I have this again. It's maltier. It's it's more sessionable. So it's not like your IPAs that are 8%, 9%. This was about 4%.
Right.
So you can have a few and still walk home.
True. So to give us a rundown of the 12 beers that typically would be on the...
So we like to keep a nice array of, so from lighter beers, we have what we call our cream ale. So it's very light in color, light in flavor. So people that come in and says, you know what, I just like your standard, they say your standard beer. And people come in, they like a light beer. And I'm like, do you mean light in color, light in flavor, light in hops?
Yeah.
It's interesting when you try to ferret out what they're interested in. So we'll start with a cream ale. Our American pale ales tend to be lighter. And we'll dry hop them to get a lot of citrus notes from the hops so they can be very flavorful, not so bitter,
right.
Very easy to drink in the summertime. We'll have our hoppy beers, our IPAs, our West Coast IPA, which has been our number one seller. People enjoy our double IPA. And that's currently off tap, so we've been hearing a few grumbles from consumers that come in. It's a good beer, but it's a more difficult beer for the brewer to do. Mm-hmm. Typically, we'll use 600 to 800 pounds of malt. We have a 10-barrel brew house, so each barrel is 31 gallons. So we're typically brewing 310 gallons of beer at a time.
Wow.
And so that's when we'll use 600 to 800 pounds of malt. For the double IPA, he uses 1,000, and that's the most we could fit in our system. So it just creates some challenges for him, and he doesn't. The beer's good, but it's just a lot of work for him to brew.
Right.
We'll be bringing it back, so not to worry. Mm-hmm. Saisons and Hefeweizen. So we try to do seasonal beers depending on the type of season. And the summertime, the Hefeweizen, very light, very summery beer, very hazy, and it's about the yeast. So there's not a lot of hops in it. and it, you want that yeast flavor to come through. And he stresses the yeast a little bit, so when you smell it, you get a lot of clove and a lot of banana, and it really makes for a very interesting, very summertime beer. In the fall, we did an Oktoberfest. We did a Marzahn that just... We learned our lesson. Next year, we have to do more.
Yeah, so, Marzahn's a big hit, man. You got to do that.
And did a pumpkin that the brewer really didn't care to do, but people loved it. And we'll have to double that one up. And so Christmas time, we did our seasonal beer. We did a winter warmer, so it was very high. I had a lot of Belgian candy, a lot of spices. Mm-hmm. And so this spring, we did our cranberry saison because we did it for Thanksgiving.
Right.
And it just flew off the shelf, and people really... It's an interesting beer. It's a little bit tart and sour on the finish.
Mm-hmm.
We get a lot of patrons that come in. Guys come in, they'll try anything, but a lot of women will come in and say, I'm not really a beer drinker. And we say, try this.
Yeah.
And they're like, wow. Because to them, it's more
love
like
those people.
It's more like a wine cooler. So it's something interesting. In fact, when we were down, we were at the AC Beer Festival last week, and that was our very first beer to go. And so we kicked that one first. It's an interesting beer. So... we try to keep a nice broad mix, something that, as I mentioned, people come in with different taste palates. And yep. We're really trying to appeal to someone along that taste spectrum.
Mm-hmm. Dark beers?
Yeah,
I know you got them because I was over there and you had a porter, right?
We have a porter. That's currently off. We have a stout. We have a stout, a dry Irish stout with coffee. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting about that one is our brewer lives in Upper Black Eddy. And he found a place that roasts their own coffee beans. And so he came down with us, and he prepared four different coffees for us. And this is a great part of my job, right? We sat there with the brewer, and we tried the coffee with each one of the stouts. And we're like, which one did we like the best? And like, this is awesome. And so we picked the coffee we liked the best. And so typically, if you want to add coffee to a beer, it's going to dilute the beer. We're like, well, we don't want to dilute our beer. So the coffee roaster, he made what was called a cold brew concentrate. So we made maybe 9 barrels, so that's 270 gallons, and we only added 2 liters of that concentrate, but it gives it a nice coffee finish, and it's nice. Really nice.
Wow.
We're going up to Morristown for a beer fest, and it's a bacon and beer fest. And I like to, when I do my tours at the brewery, I like to show what malts look like in different grains, and I like to show them like the, we have dark malts that go into the dark roastiness and chocolate notes that go into our porters and stouts.
Mm-hmm.
There's one, I have them smell, and it's smoked with mesquite. So you get this bacon barbecue flavor, and people are like, that sounds amazing. So I asked the brewer to come up with a recipe, and we're going to make a bacon chocolate porter, imperial porter, for that show. And I explained that to people, and they're like, that sounds really good. I'm hoping it comes out good, but this is where we do these small experimental batches and see how they work out.
You never know. All right, we're talking with Bob King from Lone Eagle Brewery, and he's talking to us all about these delicious beers. We're at National Beer Day today, and we're celebrating with Lone Eagle. We're going to take another quick break, and we'll be right back with more of Good Morning Hunterdon in just a moment.
The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce is proud to present HunterdonChamberRadio.com. All business, all talk, all community. Bringing you local news, information, events, and informative programming. Proudly serving the businesses and residents of Hunterdon County, New Jersey.
Hi, I'm Joe Peters of Weikert Realtors. Buying or selling a property can be one of the most expensive undertakings you face in your lifetime. And selecting the right realtor to help you through this process can dramatically affect your success or your failure. I have personally helped hundreds of buyers and sellers through this process in achieving their dreams and goals in 100 in Somerset County areas over the past 10 years. I believe that this experience should be a smooth, seamless one for you and not a roller coaster ride. But the best judgment as to whether or not I deliver this to my customers is their reactions in their own words.
One of the things we liked about Joe was that he would return calls within minutes if he wasn't able to pick up.
You know, Joe guided us through the process of selling our home and made a complicated transaction appear seamless.
How do I accomplish this? By approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, I try to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them my own. Then I go out and take the mass amounts of data that we have and distill them down to a few understandable action points to be considered. Finally, I control the entire process through technologies to ensure that we're not going to hit any speed bumps along the way. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let me show you how to take my level of professional expertise and put it to work for you in achieving your real estate goals and dreams. I can be reached at 908-238-0118. Thanks for your time.
Hi, this is Ruth Ann Disatel, celebrant officiant with Celebration of a Lifetime. When people ask me why I joined the Chamber, it's because I want to get to know you and what you're all about. And I want you to get to know me and what I'm all about. And together, I'd like to celebrate what we can do for Hunterdon County.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
National Beer Day, Lone Eagle Brewing is here with me. Bob King is telling us all about what it's like to be at Lone Eagle. And they've only been brewing beer for, got to be about, what, 12 months now.
We've been open for 8 months. We started brewing in middle of June of last year, so about
amazing. Nine months and already gaining fame. I was reporting the other day that you guys won your first award, and it's a pretty prestigious one, if I might add.
It was. We were at the Atlantic City Beer and Music Fest, which we've come to learn is the second largest in the country.
Where's the first?
Great American Brew Fest out in Denver, Colorado, and that happens in the fall.
Okay.
And so I believe they attracted Atlantic City. This, if I'm not, somebody mentioned to me that this might be their biggest event at the Atlantic City Convention Center during a given year.
Nice.
So I think they draw in around 20,000 people. There were around 200 breweries represented, about 1,000 different beers there.
Now, did you just bring one? Or
no, we brought four different beers with us.
Okay.
We entered three into competition, so you can enter beers into competition.
Right.
Which gets judged by a number of people, so it's not just by one person.
Right.
We submitted our West Coast IPA, which has been our bestseller from day one. We submitted our Cranberry Saison because it's just been a great seller, very seasonal, and people enjoy it. We entered that into the fruit beer category, and we entered in a local pale ale. And I thought that, personally, I thought that was the one that was going to win some awards, because we had other breweries coming up to us and saying, this is really good. When you have had brewers come to you and say, this is really good beer, I take that as a compliment.
Well,
and
so you won already.
What's unique about that beer is we've made it with all New Jersey malts and all New Jersey hops. And so that's why we entered into the local category, which was kind of vague, but it came out really, really well. It's a nice, hoppy, crisp beer to drink, and the flavors are just wonderful.
So what happens now? You got this award, you didn't even have a shot at Denver last autumn because you guys were too early.
Yeah, we're too early.
I wasn't even thinking about that. So you got this first award. So what happens after this? What does this all of a sudden jettison you up a notch in respect?
It does, and we're still digesting, to be honest. So when I was working the booth when they came over and presented our award. So we won best IPA of the show. So just winning one of the places we would have been happy with, coming first was just, I can't tell you how excited we are. And what it's doing is it's just people are now calling up, where can I get your beer?
Problem for the corporate IT guy now.
So right. So we self-distribute. So I'm the guy that's delivering the beer. Right, Todd delivers beer. I deliver beer. And here I am.
He delivered beer to the office. Here.
I got a college degree and I got a master's, and now I'm delivering beer. Right. And I was at one customer, and they looked at me and like, "Are you the owner?" I said, "Yes, I am." I said, "You're delivering beer?" I said, "I absolutely am. I want your feedback." And they love it. They love local, and they love when the owner is involved in that. I said, I want to hear how the beer's selling. I want to hear their customers' reactions. That's great feedback for me to make sure we're spot on with what we're doing.
Man, it's kind of like buying into your sports team, right? I mean, you kind of want your local brewery to be good and a place of pride. Yeah. It's pretty cool. It really is.
But it presents some challenges because we're out now. We have a couple of accounts in Jersey City, so it's a bit of a travel. In fact, after this show, I'm driving down to Atlantic City to drop off some of our cans to Joe Canals, which is a great customer for us. And I had another call from a different branch of Joe Canales call me up this week. He says, we have a really good customer that had your beer at Atlantic City. Can you bring me a six-still? I'm like,
a six?
A six-still, which is
a six-still.
It's 5 gallons of beer. And I'm like, okay. Well, you're in Atlantic City. I don't mind traveling a little further. I'll bring you the six-still, right?
So nice.
Well, hopefully that'll lead to more. But it's great now. The buzz is getting out. People are asking us, we want your beer down here, right? So now somebody said there's a beer show in Wildwood coming up. And they said, well, you show up. And I'm like, my partner has a condo down there, so we'd love to go to Wildwood.
Sure.
And so we'll probably see if we can squeeze in, bring in our beer and enjoy the shore.
So now this is a tough problem to have, a nice problem to have.
A very nice problem.
But you're being clamored for appearances. That's nice.
And so people, we're actually expanding the brewery based on that. So we started with two 10-barrel fermenters. I mentioned we had a 10-barrel brew house.
Mm-hmm.
So we started with two 10-barrel and two 20-barrels. So when we fill up the 20-barrel fermenters, we've been typically brewing back-to-back days.
Right.
Same beer just to fill it up. Last November, December, we had to tell our salespeople, stop selling. We were running low on beer. We never want to be out of beer at the brewery.
No.
We want people to come in, and I don't want to turn them away because I don't have beer.
Right.
So we've ordered.